Hi, this is Mike from Buddies in Space. Thanks for tuning in. So we were very excited to have special guest Josh Lippincott on this episode. Unfortunately, we ran into some weird fucking audio issues. Apparently, Josh, he told me I could blame him. He's one of those people who fucks up electronics when he's near them. So definitely going to make a mental note not to let him like ever near any of my equipment, ever. So stay away, Josh. I know you're listening. Anyway, it's probably a loose wire in my mic or something, but I do apologize. The audio is definitely not as good as it normally is. I did the best I could. So if it sounds like there is some fourth person in the room munching on like sticks and also snapping their fingers or perhaps clicking large human-sized mandibles, there was not a fourth person in the room. It just happened to be a bunch of weird fucking sounds that sound like it. Also, we intermittently sound like we're really far away. I did my best with the audio leveling. It won't blow out your speakers or headphones, but it will sound a little bit odd. Still not the worst audio ever, though. So and we had a great time with Josh, so I wanted to keep the episode. But again, very sorry. Please do enjoy as best you can our special guest, Josh Lippincott, on episode 62 of Buddies in Space. I could do an echo effect there because, like, I have a Mac in front of me. It's late. I'm fucking tired. Anyway, here we go. I am actually recording this time.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Have a seat, Josh?
Do I have to? I prefer to loom.
I'll point out everything now, and then you can look later. That way you won't be distracted. So this is my Firefly Loot Crate dedicated shadow box.
Right.
And it's just slowly being taken over by all things Firefly. I didn't have room for any of the Firefly Serenity theme box, so I put it all on top. Star Wars, Arcade Fire Star Wars, that thing over there is obviously my my newfound love of video game kitsch. my Aerith shrine, all imported, and that's most of it. A little bit of random shit up there, and then the Batcave of monitors.
Indeed.
And now everybody knows what sitting here is like.
Yeah.
And the hatchet.
Oh, and the hatchet. It's always the hatchet.
is there a purpose behind the hatchet?
Multiple purposes. When I'm on a call for work that is driving me insane, I like do made up katas with it. Because I have my Bluetooth headset. So I walk around the office, my very tiny office, and do very tight turns. I leave the bracket thing on.
Oh, that's wise.
But I like to stash weapons safely throughout the house. So if I'm ever home and I hear a commotion upstairs that isn't my family, I can run up with a hatchet and be like, yo, fuck with me. I like to think I'll stick it out of the cat door and chop people's feet.
Well, I mean, that would certainly be a deterrent. I think after losing a couple of toes, I'd lose interest in gaining entry.
Yeah, you don't even know what happened. And you're like, I was in this motherfucker's house and my toes are gone. How did that happen?
No, a hatchet, even a sharpened hatchet, is kind of more of a blunt instrument. You'd know that there'd be a sharp feeling of impact and pain.
Well, no, I mean, you wouldn't see it.
Ah.
Because my arm would come out the cat door, boop, and then go back in.
I'm sorry, you're pretty pale, you'd see it.
But it's a white door. Hi, we are Buddies in Space. You are?
As Michael Smith. And you are?
And Michael Carrasco.
And we have with us
special guest.
How about J. Michael Lippincott?
Oh, what are you, an 80s actor?
Make sure I fit in. I'm trying to chameleon-like entry into the inner circle here.
Salud. Oh, it takes a lot more than that to get into the inner circle of Buddies in Space.
It's a foot in the door.
It's like $50. That's really all it takes. Let's be honest. Wow.
So, I don't know. I hope you guys like this. Something I kind of threw together out of various parts I found lying around the house.
It's strong. Not in a bad way. I mean, it's got some fucking kick to it.
Yeah, I what we got here is a Kori gin, which is made in Spain, but has Japanese herbs and stuff in it. So they gave it a Japanese name, even though it's made in Spain.
Keep talking. I can put it out every time. I don't give him the coaster. He doesn't know that thing is there for the glass.
Would you prefer?
No. This is fine. It's a bigger target for me, which is probably going to help later on.
Just let him use it. A Corey Gin.
So, a Corey Gin.
I always drink my drink.
We've got a bit of Saint Germain, which is turning out to be kind of a nice little tool.
You love, you're like, that's like your little multi-tool.
It is, it is.
It's like, I need to make a drink with booze. Saint Germain.
The Leatherman of gins.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, man, we got to trademark that.
We got a little, a bit of something that I found at Trader Joe's called...
Lemon Zinger. Ginger.
Ginger Zinger.
Ginger Zinger.
Which is kind of a gingery, lemony drink.
Zinger.
This juice thing. I was like playing around with this earlier, and I had more of that, the lemon zinger in. It made it a little too sweet for me.
That's why you're
so
trashed.
So I cut back on it. No, I just had a little bit. A little tiny bit, just a taste. Make sure this one's going to be horrible.
Every good cook samples his dish.
Yeah. And a little bitters. A little bitters.
Orange bitters.
A little orange bitter. So, well, what do you guys think? Is it good, bad, awful, not too meh?
Let's put our guests on the
experiment.
Josh, what do you think?
I do enjoy it. It's got... I don't have a refined palate. For sure.
Who gives a shit? So, what do you think?
It does taste rather strong in that I get the warm glow, which is always nice to get a sip and you get that warmth. Certainly a bit of citrus. I couldn't tell you which citrus, so orange,
it's
lemon.
Lemon.
Citric acid is citric acid.
Anyway, it's got a little bit of, but it's got a good amount of sweetness to it still, even with the bitters.
I'm surprised, because knowing your dislike of sweet drinks.
Yeah, but I know Josh has a little bit of a sweet tooth, so that's
why true.
I went with that. And the Saint Germain has a lot of sweetness in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, honestly, I catch savory more than sweet.
Oh, wow. All right.
Well, you hit that salt lick outside my door before you came, right?
Well, it was there.
Yeah, no one ever asked me about it. I've had it there for years, waiting. I feel like it's going to be a conversation piece. No one ever says... Hey, why is there a salt lake outside your door?
I thought it was for guests.
It is.
Of course, I pass by. I take a couple of perfunctory licks.
Thank you.
And then enter your domicile.
Well, anyway, I'm enjoying it. And that's what really matters.
Yeah.
So screw you, Mr. Carassi.
You know what this is going to do? This is going to get me buzzed enough to make a very important order tonight. And that order will be Papa John's, which I am ready to go.
All right. So... first things first.
Who the fuck
Josh,
are you?
No, even before that. Josh, when we last saw you, you said that you do listen to podcasts sometimes, and that you want to shout at us with some amount of frequency.
Argue.
So
we never do that on this in this podcast.
Lay it
ever.
On us. What is the one thing you wanted to argue with us the most about?
What is
it comes to your mind?
You're
like,
warm
I can't
your
believe
brain.
Those idiots were saying that.
Better than Sharon Stone. I'm still mad about not remembering Sharon Stone.
That was almost a shouting point. I was like, come on, guys. Sharon Stone. Really? You're looking this up. Okay. It's just it's minor things that come and go. I couldn't give you any bullet points. Maybe argue is too strong a word. Maybe just offer my opinion.
Well, we're all geeks here. You got an 8-bit Star Wars shirt on. You're clearly wearing your cred. So argument is a hallowed tradition amongst geek circles.
It's a sad day when we don't argue
yeah,
with each other.
Something.
I save up all my aggression all week just for podcasts so I can take it out on Smite.
Hit us with something. You gotta throw something in our face, you know?
I'm sorry, the last couple of episodes I haven't found argument worthy.
Oh, all right.
Wait, are we losing our touch?
Or perhaps just... delving into realms where I'm not quite as familiar and don't have an opinion to share.
That's fair. Well, I won't put you on the spot that way, but I do want to know who the fuck you are. So I'll give you my perspective. So you are my wife's cousin.
Indeed.
That is irrefutable.
It is.
You are also a frequent a member of the inner circle of our board game group, as it were.
Less than intermittent. Or greater than intermittent guest of the board gaming.
So you're not just a guest. I mean, you are a board game nut.
You have a board game double bag. That means you are a board game nut.
Actually, I need to find a bigger bag. That bag cannot contain enough games, honestly.
If I'm going I got to you, man. Around. I feel you. I've got two bags, and it's not enough. I need.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This is when Bag Envy started. You heard it here first, episode 62.
Yeah, I've often joked with my girlfriend that we were just going to graduate into carry-on luggage, and I'm just going to come in trundling a wheeled suitcase behind me.
I like it. I like that idea.
I'm sure that's been done. Someone's been like, yo, I'm going to go travel to Gen Con, and I need to bring every game I like, so make it happen.
Plus one spare bag for what you got to bring back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I actually travel with that. I travel, we got like a fold up, like a duffel bag. Uh-huh. I mean, it's a huge duffel bag, but it's collapsible. It's a thin material and just folds right up. So, yeah, we take it to bringing that along on our vacations.
Non-gamers may not realize, but the modern board game is heavy as fuck. And when you got like six or seven complex games with like 200 or 300 pieces a piece, it's a lot of cardboard to lug around. Like, that's just no joke.
Cardboard pieces, dice, counters.
Maybe it's metal if you got some metal figurines in there.
Well, even like something like Thunderstone or Dominion set, where collected, seven or eight expansions, and it's just like this massive hunk of cards.
I have gotten into Magic the Gathering.
That
has graduated into a two-bag carry, and the primary duffel bag probably could be used for a good workout.
I had $1,000 into the Star Wars collectible card game.
Oh, man.
My decks were unbeatable. I had the equivalent of a weenie deck. A dark side weenie deck.
What does that mean?
So in magic terms,
I'm not
terms,
a magic guy. So
explain weenie deck in magic terms.
Oh no, I don't know the terminology because I just casually play with one of my friends. I just enjoy collecting the cards and building the decks.
Oh, okay.
I like the strategy behind building decks out of disparate cards.
And that's what the whole appeal of the weenie deck.
The deck building games where you purchase from a common pool are well and good, but I like to build a deck with strategies behind it and then test those strategies out. And then usually the deck is abandoned, so I can build my next deck and next strategy.
So you find one that's unbeatable.
No, that doesn't even matter to me. I've gotten...
You're doing it wrong!
I've got a deck that was fairly unbeatable, but that there was no longer a challenge to it. So I had to build a new deck, new strategy.
So did you guys actually go to like meets or something where you would play against other people?
Back in my Star Wars days, like in high school, yes.
A thing in school you would do?
No. The problem with Star Wars was you had to play both sides. So it was a two-hour commitment to do a proper game. You had to do a light side deck and a dark side deck. Yeah. So, I mean, Magic, by comparison, was cheaper to play and quicker. And more people played it. Mm-hmm. So, like, Ben and I, my best friend from high school, Ben and I were, like, two of the Star Wars guys who put a ton of money in it. The weenie deck, the concept, as I understand it with Magic, which I've never once played. But, you hung around the card gaming circuit and you kind of picked up on that. I used to go up to people and say, oh, what's a Black Lotus do? And then just walk away. Because that was the card. It was the $400 card that everyone wanted.
Yeah.
And I remember distinctly one time the guy playing the person I said that to, like, I went up and looked at his hand. The other dude was like, fuck, and just threw his hand down and walked away. I was like, dude, I was kidding. I'm sorry. He doesn't have a Black Lotus.
I just wanted to know what it did.
but I knew that it would upset the other person if they knew. So the weenie deck is, instead of doing the Vaders and the Executors, like the big cards, the Death Stars, you do a bunch of small cards, like the weenies, stack.
I like to call it a swarm deck, Zergling Rush from StarCraft. It is the Zerg deck, tiny horde. It's also a good build for a fast deck, where you're getting lots of guys out early as you're building up your mana.
Mm.
A good basis of a fast deck is a lot of little guys, especially if they build off each other.
Right.
When they drop, they have a bonus or something, or boost their compatriots.
That sounds like we're saying the same thing, maybe with different terms. We called it, in Oneonta, we called it a weenie deck. That's what I knew it as.
Yeah.
But the light side deck, I went big. It was the Luke, the Han, the Leia, all the expensive cards. I wanted to relive the movies with the light side deck. The dark side deck, I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to throw every bounty hunter at you at stacks, and I'm going to do a Kessel run and just crush your ass with the annoying card. And then Vader comes out and everything gets a 20 times bonus. It's like, and the nuclear option.
So was part of that, would you build a deck that was kind of a show-off deck in Star Wars?
Yeah.
Look at how many cards I have.
Oh, yeah.
I've got Leia. Oh, I've got...
But Star Wars, I mean, Magic was all, like, it was its own universe. It didn't have lore to it. I mean, it had lore to it, but it didn't have the pre-existing lore it was taking from. Star Wars was all about prestige, and that was... You had to put so much money, or you had the white-bordered cards, and that was your shame deck, because those were the reprints.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's like, oh, nice Uncanny X-Men number one. Oh, printed last year. Never mind. It's that kind of thing. It's like, oh, you bought the cheap knockoffs just so you could get the card's powers but not have the original card.
So does that even, count? Are those official cards? Or
yeah. I mean, they're made by the same people.
But you just should feel bad about
that. Yeah. You hang your head in shame. I play Han Solo.
Kinda. Well, I guess.
I think they started nerfing them, actually, if I recall. The later reprints got weaker.
Yeah. Huh. They did.
As they should.
Exactly.
No. When I played Star Wars, my light side deck was all about synergy.
Corporate deck.
I had a lot of that stuff where if you had a couple of characters together, you would get Battle Destiny draws, which would boost. And I usually won through attrition. I would lose battles, and then my opponent would lose all of his cards to attrition.
That was the thing. Attrition was the thing you had to take into account that the other person did to you. And it was a bitch, because it would just bleed you out, right? If I remember correctly. It's been years since I played it.
Well, and only high-level cards tended to have immunity to attrition. Right. So your Vader would be safe, but the next battle, he's seriously outgunned because he lost all of his stormtroopers.
All the minions are gone.
Oh, they're all dead.
The moral of the story with the Star Wars was I lost all my cards. I lost the entire collection in one of my infinite number of moves after college.
Oh, man.
So, somewhere out there is a kick-ass deck that no one plays anymore, if they even know where it is.
I don't know if I ever reach kick-ass status, but I still have all my cards.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, it just took about $1,000. There you go. I don't know where I had that much money as a kid. Jesus.
You didn't. You bought $5 packs, and you saved up. And
I hemorrhaged the shit out of it.
Yeah. So it was a slow build.
I remember distinctly working with someone at the video store. The older brother of a friend of mine who I went to school with, her older brother had an extra copy of the Millennium Falcon. Mm. And I spent days needling him to figure out what he wanted in trade. And it came out to like non-card stuff. It was like, I'll give you this comic and this movie. I need that card for my deck so bad. I can't afford to buy it.
Yeah. So, to change gears, and speaking of movies, something just came out today. I know at least one person other than me has seen this. Uh-oh. So, the trailer for Thor Ragnarok came out. Have you seen it, Josh?
No, I have lost touch with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm afraid.
Are you familiar with the outstanding works of one Taika Waititi?
No.
Do you know Flight of the Conchords?
I don't.
Do you know The Wilder People?
Nope.
Do you know What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire mockumentary that came out a couple years ago?
I do not.
Man. You are annoying to talk to. You don't know Flight of the Conchords?
I never watched it. Oh. It didn't seem that interesting. It really didn't interest me.
My love tends towards, I love cheesy movies.
Well, yeah. So you need to be watching all of these things.
Well, then draw me up a list and I shall try it.
I will provide you with a list. And I will put the list on the website and we will share the list with everyone.
All right, so let's do what we did last time. Let's
pause it.
Stop.
I just mentioned I was intrigued by the 80s styling of the writing and the neon letters during the trailers.
Yeah, that's super strong 80s styling to it.
Very much so.
Taika Waititi has very specific stylistic things, but he is a New Zealand comedic Maori director. So he's basically the oddest choice for a Marvel movie since James Gunn with Guardians of the Galaxy. Which was awful. Also, no, it was not awful. It was also, very off the cuff. No one thought it was going to do well. It was really funny and really good. So I have very high expectations for this because Erica and I love Taika Waititi. I'm very excited. There's a much more Taika Waititi style of mockumentary with Thor and his roommate. Mm-hmm. They just picked this random office worker that Thor is living with. And did an office style follow them around in a day in the life kind of thing.
Okay.
But Marvel hired him. They're like, okay, you can do what you do as well as make a Marvel movie with all of the, that comes with it.
That's right. So we're expecting this to be
heavy on a comedy.
I don't want to say light comedy, but definitely comedic kind of buddy sort of movie.
Yeah, I would expect that. Yeah. He does that. That's his thing. He always does buddies in all of his stuff. Like the Concords, the Wilder People. What We Do in the Shadows. It's all about that.
So I suspect that the trailer... my first reaction when I saw the trailer is that, wow, this is giving away a lot of plot points. I mean, we were seeing a lot of stuff that's going to happen.
But I think you're right. I think that's all a very small part of the movie.
Right. I think that was like within the first 15 to 20 minutes of the film.
That seemed like a very small, like, single storyline.
Yeah.
Like, because they got to get Thor and Hulk together.
The trigger.
Right.
Yeah.
The question all along has been, where is the Hulk? Yeah. That's what everyone kept wondering in Captain America.
Civil right, because he just appeared after the last Avengers. Captain America, right? Civil War, right?
No, he wasn't
in Civil War.
No, he wasn't in Civil War.
Was it before that?
Yep, it was the second Avengers movie. He stole a Quinjet or whatever and took off.
All right. So, have either of you seen what's the Hulk one? Oh my gosh, I was just reading about this today.
The Hulk.
No.
The Incredible Hulk.
No.
The Amazing Hulk.
Planet Hulk.
Oh, the cartoon. Hulk.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Yeah, there's
based on a comic series.
Yeah, it's based on a comic series. And it's Planet Hulk. And one of the things that struck me about this trailer is that Hulk is decked out like Planet Hulk.
And gladiator gear.
Yeah, and gladiator gear.
Gladiator fight at the beginning of Hulk, Planet Hulk. That's where that initiated that sequence of events.
Right. So you want to talk about, just give people a little bit about Planet Hulk?
Oh, my Planet Hulk knowledge is rusty. Basically, Hulk...
Your Planet Hulk knowledge is weak, old man.
One of the ways, you know, they're always trying to find a way to make the world safe from Hulk, because if he gets pissed off enough, he could conceivably shatter the world.
Hulk mean well, but Hulk very destructive.
Hulk bull in China shop, and China shop is Planet Earth. So, one of the strategies was at one point they sent him off into space, as they tend to do with things like that, and he ends up landing on a planet where he's captured and forced into gladiatorial combat, which appeases him for a while, and then ends up in one of those helping the underdog rise from the bottom power struggles that tend to happen.
That comic books love.
Indeed.
Yeah.
You know, the oppressed people. So, Spartacus rises.
Hulk!
Right. It was like Hulk of Spartacus.
Hulk Spartacus.
And I think they like kind of nerfed his powers for it because, you know.
Spartacus couldn't destroy whole armies with a single swipe of his fist?
He could, but he was just too genteel to do so.
Okay. A tip of the hat to you, good Roman sir.
Well, I could crush your entire empire. I shall not.
So, I think what they're doing in this movie is drawing on Planet Hulk, mm-hmm. and probably a couple of other things from the comics.
I wasn't familiar
sort of
with...
making their own story out of it.
Right. I wasn't familiar with whatever Cate Blanchett's character is, which I assume is based in some kind of mythos from the comic.
Her name is Hela or something like that.
Hela badass. Hela. I'll work on that and get back to you.
Yeah,
do so.
So
write
yeah,
some lines.
I'm not familiar with that character either.
Ah, that doesn't even ring a bell for me.
No, but this also gets them out into space,
mm-hmm.
and I think this is probably going to tie in with Guardians of the Galaxy.
All leading up to
probably going to tie in with the Soul Stones and whatnot, especially it's, with yeah. Mjolnir getting scrapped
temporarily
because there's a definite connection between
hey nerd who's nerd raging about spoilers right now, it's in the trailer, go fuck yourself. You guys ruined the trailer for me.
Yeah. Interesting to see what's going to happen with the Infinity Stones, because of course in the comics Thanos does indeed create a gauntlet and has control of all of them and pretty much just about becomes the god above all gods.
What a weird... Smike bought it on digital and let me read it. It is the weirdest, trippiest, acid...
I don't think it holds up that well,
it did
honestly.
It did not hold up. Have you read it in any recent years?
No. No, more along the lines of wikiing. What I did enjoy with Doctor Strange, how they had one of his artifacts ended up being...
I didn't see it.
...one of the Infinity Stones.
You didn't see it either, right?
I haven't seen it yet. I know. I really want
to. Well, Mel doesn't like Benedict Cumberbatch.
No, but she's down with it.
Is she? Okay, I'll get it on Netflix, and we'll watch it. We still have to watch Midnight Special.
Well, I truly enjoyed it. One of his major artifacts, which it is a a divergence from the comics, because in the comics, of course, the artifact isn't powered by an Infinity Stone. It's just
an artifact.
His artifacts right. that he mm-hmm. has because he's a Sorcerer Supreme. But in this, they made an Infinity Stone, which works within...
Sorcerer Supreme!
The, yeah. well, less jazz hands, more an ultimate power.
Yeah, but it kind of begs to be done with jazz hands. I'm just saying.
I'm actually encouraged that they're doing more stuff that's like... It's kind of like the comics, but not, you know, not religiously following any of the comic original storylines. And especially with regards to the Infinity Gauntlet, because, like we were just saying, it doesn't hold up that well. Because Thanos becomes, like, crazy powerful, and Thanos is like, oh, well, we're just going to die now. And a lot of people do die.
Well, of course.
And then through no sensible, like, intelligent writing whatsoever, it all gets fixed in the end. And it's like,
well, yeah, and that's, really? That's the old writing yourself in the corner.
Did you outdrink me? You both outdrank me. Holy shit.
Yeah.
It never happened.
I enjoyed this.
Do you want to get another one?
No, I'm good. Well, I got to drive home.
My fidgetiness is well known, so if there's something in my hand, I'm going to get a drink.
Oh, you're like me. Okay, good.
Yeah, this went down easy.
It really did. But I really had to order that pizza. It was very important.
Well, fine.
I've been running heavily again, so my body's like, I know you do paleo, but you need, if you're drinking alcohol, I'm going to make you get carbs. And I'm like, yes, sir.
Somebody's got to soak up that alcohol.
So yeah, looking forward to Ragnarok, looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy, and looking forward to seeing some things start to kind of come together, but not in a way that leads it to the right straight from the book Infinity Gauntlet.
It's a 70s storyline. I don't think they're going to do it straight up like that. They are putting a shit ton of characters.
But the like 70s/80s style.
Yeah, but that you don't.
That's really interesting, though.
Okay, but you're not familiar with the director, so I feel like that's a lot him. They gave him a lot of latitude here, more than some other directors would have gotten. So I really strongly believe it has to do with him as well.
Okay. I'm just saying that it's interesting, and you know, Josh noticed it, and I noticed it a lot more watching it this time. I don't know what to make of it, really.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
No, it kind of reminded me of Flash Gordon a little bit.
I can see that. Did you see the Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets trailer?
No.
Okay, here you can help weigh in on this. You've seen The Fifth Element, right?
Indeed.
Did you enjoy it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mike's an asshole and didn't love it, so he can write home die.
I have already stated I enjoy cheesy movies.
Right, that is right, but that's why I didn't like it.
It's over very the top cheesy. Space opera,
but
it's
aware that it is.
It is cheesiness done right. It's hard to put into words, but I don't like all cheesy movies because there's two categories they have to be in. Either one, like you said, the self-aware cheesy movie. They are embracing it. They are just aware of the cheese. They are going full tilt into the cheese.
Grating the cheese.
They are
slicing the cheese.
Making fondue and dipping cheese into cheese. And just
cheese on cheese.
Embracing it to the point where it is just done right. And it flows and it's just glorious.
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2.
Well, it sounds like
Army of Darkness.
That's where you guys are putting Fifth Element.
Absolutely.
In that self-aware, tongue-in-cheek, doesn't take itself seriously genre film.
Yes, this is ridiculous, but we don't care because it's awesome, and we're still going to do it. So screw
and,
you.
And, you know, badass chick.
Absolutely.
But Valerian has a lot of similar aesthetics.
So what's the other one, then?
Oh, the other one is the Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark territory, where it's B-level actors... And they want so desperately to make a good movie, and they are so sincere.
I'm going to get my music career back.
Putting their hearts into this movie, but it's god awful. And everyone else knows it, but the actors and director are just embracing it. And this is a great sci-fi slash horror slash whatever this is flick.
We need Cyndi Lauper, Tiffany, and that girl from Big Lebowski. Go!
So I gotta ask you guys, have you both seen Flash Gordon, like the 80s movie Flash Gordon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen where they dramatically put their arms in a rock with a poisonous...
Well, I'm trying to figure out which camp that one is in. Is it intentionally cheesy, or is it, oh my god, did they not realize how
different,
crazy, stupid...
It's different. It's throwback cheesy.
Throwback cheesy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's from the 80s.
But the movie was after the show. The show was earlier.
Yeah.
It's throwback cheesy. It's trying to be the cheese of the... That's the impression I got.
Basically,
it's harkening back sentimentality-wise right. to the show.
They're going full tilt into nostalgia, ignoring the fact that the old show was complete shit now. Because at the time, I mean, if you ever listen to that old, like, old Dick Tracy, the old shows, mm-hmm. the old, like, it's horrible.
The radio shows or the show shows?
Both.
So I've actually listened to some of the radio shows, The Shadow and Dick Tracy.
You know, like, the old campy Batman. Mm-hmm. At the time, that was what a show was.
And that was what a comic book was.
And that was true source material that was sincere, and it was taken as such. It wasn't campy at the time. It's only looking back.
I don't know about that. I think at the time, the belief was that you had to be campy. If you were doing comic books, it was funny papers. You had to do campy.
Yeah, there had to be an element of camp.
But it was the belief that you had to be. It wasn't a stylistic choice.
It wasn't a stylistic choice. It wasn't an accidental offspring of some bad, poor choices. It was necessity.
You just named a lot of movies there.
Well, absolutely. I can buy that. But yeah, I suppose there is a third camp of cheese where we are really trying to capture an old feel, and the only way to do it is to kind of embrace that old cheese
It didn't age well. It's cheesy now.
Unfortunately, it's moldy cheese.
Right. It started as good, you know, like Gouda, and now it's moldy.
You didn't put it in the proper location. It didn't age well.
Not cave aged. Nope.
Yeah. You broke the wax seal, and the mold got in, well, and now it's just ruined, but all right, whatever, it's too late. We're serving it.
The guests are here. You got to put something
out. Cut off the mold, hope for the best, get some good crackers, and serve the good wine, and hope they're too drunk to notice.
cover over it. Can we tell you about an outstanding dinner that experience we had recently?
By all means.
So we went to FLX Table mm-hmm. recently. I don't know if you saw on Facebook.
Just glancing.
So
let's talk about where this is and what this location is.
Well, I'll tell you how we decided we wanted to go there. So Erica, your cousin, my wife.
Indeed.
It's Mike's friend. Just to give her a relationship to everyone in the room.
the nexus of this gathering.
The one that brought us all together. She's from Geneva, New York. Geneva is not a budding metropolis.
No.
Although its crime rate would lead you to believe otherwise, but it's only funny because it's true.
I visited.
Tiny little touristy lake town, you know, western New York, Finger Lakes region.
With a rapey college.
Very rapey college.
Yes.
Won't name it, but boy, is it rapey. And boy, do they like to cover that rapiness up. there's this wife, this husband-wife couple, Chris and Isabel, I don't remember the last name, and they are classing the fucking shit out of that town. So they opened a winery, Element Winery. They opened FLX Wiener.
Okay.
And they do, you know, hot dogs and sausage and that kind of stuff.
Wienery.
FLX Wienery. That's probably better named than Wiener.
Yes.
Hey, you want to try my FLX Wiener?
So they have a winery and a wienery.
They do have a wienery and a winery, and then they opened FLX Table.
And the wienery is a hot dog, a gourmet hot dog.
Sausage, all that kind of stuff. The German tube-shaped mm-hmm. meats. And then they opened FLX Table. Which is unlike, from the moment I made a reservation, unlike anything I've ever experienced. And it was judged by USA Today to be the number one restaurant in America.
Number one new restaurant.
New restaurant in America. Yeah, I guess not per se.
Yeah.
That
was from the voters. So it was a...
Well, yeah, but then they sampled the restaurants at a certain point. So Geneva, New York. And like Erica's like, this is my hometown. Like, we have to eat here. So I said about... getting a reservation, and you had a stock that I tried calling. I was reprimanded by them. You could not leave a voicemail. Don't call. You can text after midnight, or you can book online when we post the new date. And they post their reservation dates like a month out. And I checked, and they were completely booked because of the USA Today thing. So I like stalked. I was texting.
Well, part of it is because... What's the seating, like a dozen people?
So it is 12 tiny. People, two seatings a night, 12 people a seating, one table.
Wow. All right.
Tiny place.
Yeah.
Although, the way they built it made it tiny. But, mm-hmm. So yeah, not the easiest thing. We wanted to get them to go with us because they've taken us to some really incredible dinners. So stalked the website, lots of texting, got it all figured out. You pay up front. In the reservation, you pay for the meal, you pay for your drinks, you choose your drinks, you pay for them, and then all you get to choose in terms of food is, here are the allergies we have.
Right.
That's it. So right off the bat, very weird. I was pretty in the hole after a reservation, which has never happened before.
Yeah, so when you and when you're choosing your drinks, it's either you either have a wine pairing.
They only had wine pairings that day.
Okay.
They gave me three options for wine pairings from like $30 up to $150 a person. Wow. That was it.
So more of a price point. You need, how much do you want to spend on your wine pairings? And we will choose the wines within this.
They were the fun pairing,
the
baller pairing, and the big pimpin' pairing. They had a good sense of humor.
I'm starting to feel like these are the people that embrace the cheese.
They're hipsters, but they're self-aware hipsters.
There was some cheese, though.
There was some cheese. There will be cheese.
Yeah, but once we got there, they were very friendly, very, very casual, very, very sociable. It was completely unlike that other place that we talked about
in a podcast
in Pittsburgh
that had a kitchen as the primary focus of the restaurant. But the name of this place we won't talk about, just that it had a kitchen.
Yes.
Which, you know, I have to say, your misfortune was our delight, because that was a wonderful podcast to listen to, and I would love to subject you guys to more horrible dining experiences just to hear.
Wait, did you listen to the food torture episode? We agreed.
Oh, well, you tried the food.
Yeah, you tried some of it.
We'll get to that.
Tried the leftover food torture.
So the concept of this restaurant, I was talking to the guy. I was like, I played the card afterwards. I wasn't trying to get anything free from being been in the industry, but I was like, listen, you know, well into me. I was like, I've worked at some of the top restaurants in New York. I named a couple. He goes, I've had like the best meal of my life at that restaurant. So we were talking. I was like, where did this concept come from? And they're like, he's like, it wasn't even the husband. It was the guy filling in for him. Mm-hmm. But he's like, yeah, Chris and Isabel just, they enjoyed giving dinner parties, and they thought that would make a really cool concept for a restaurant. And that's what it was. You rolled in, and there was a giant piece of cured like leg on a spit, and they just cut off like pieces of.
It was like aged 2 years or something.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like some dry aged piece of like, super fatty, delicious cured meat, and they just handed it to you with cheese, and like you just took it in your hand, or like, all right. When we were sitting around drinking, we got to know each other. Of course, Erica knew like two of the people there.
Well, of course.
Out of 12, knew two
of
them.
Geneva's not a big town.
They weren't from Geneva, it was from Geneseo, so it was weird.
Well, let's say Finger Lakes is also kind of a community. If you tend to stay in the Finger Lakes, you tend to meet people within the Finger Lakes.
Who are also cousins.
But yeah, Erica is typically, yes. Erica is unable to go somewhere and not know people.
Especially in Geneva. Yeah.
Well, she's lucky she can go somewhere and not be related to people. Let's
be
honest.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so the food was, I'm going to put it second best meal of my life. A third of the cost of the number one best meal, which was Shibuya in Vegas with you guys. But yeah, so it's a sit-down farmhouse style. Erica got tea because she was driving.
Right.
And so the pairings were perfect. We managed to talk. I talked them into doing a beer pairing. Mel.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I got the medium level wine pairing, and Erica got a tea pairing. Mm-hmm. We swapped drinks every meal, every course. They all were perfect. I don't know how the fuck they paired beer, wine, and tea so well. But I just, obviously I was getting progressively more drunk, but I was like, how? I didn't understand how one person can have the knowledge of mapping the complexity of all these different flavors together so well.
And that was really my only complaint, because I can't drink wine, obviously. I don't like beer at all. I'm not a fan of tea. And it was, so I was just drinking water. And they were, no, I'm, this is an important point.
I'm miming the violin.
Yeah.
So everyone knows.
Yeah, Mike is mocking me as I'm saying
poorly.
This.
I've seen violins played. Maybe more like a fiddle.
Sure. Yeah, I'll fucking know.
The fiddle.
I was a drummer.
And our servers were noticeably upset that I wasn't pairing some sort of drink with it, and they're like, can we get you juice or something?
And whose fault was that?
I know it was mine, because I was planning to just have water, and they even asked me, he's like, what did you think you were going to drink when you were here? I'm like, water. And they're like, okay, man, if that's your thing,
you crazy.
Yeah, so I do think I did kind of miss out on this whole other level of the experience because you guys are like with the tea and the wine and the beer.
This just in, you did.
Justin.
So yeah, I would if I were to do it again. I don't like tea, but I might try the tea pairings. Anyway.
It works. They found non-caffeinated tea.
Or if they had juice that they were going to offer me,
they were going to make
you just be like paired mate.
Well, I think when you turned it down, you didn't realize that at that point, like how good they were, what they were doing with the pairings.
Yeah,
because you probably would have done it. Like now, you probably would have been like, "Yeah, give me juice and make it magical in my mouth."
They'd be like, "This is the juice of three fruits that only exist in one country in a tiny square foot." Spot.
Oh, we have it growing above your head, too. Yeah. At one point, they went to get mints, and they just reached above the table. They had hanging gardens, and they just, like, climbed up and grabbed mints.
Yeah, there was, like, this huge, just basically hanging herb garden right over the table.
Perfect.
It was a cool experience. I definitely recommend it.
But you could do it. So if you didn't drink alcohol, right, you could do it for about $50 a person.
All right.
Plus tax and tip.
Is that with the tea, I guess? I don't know.
No, the tea wasn't cheap. looking at my credit card statement today, I was like, I know what the beers cost. That was some expensive tea. Although it was really good tea, for the record.
Well, it was dry aged tea.
I'm sure it was.
Well, the fruit was, because there was like a three fruit mix that they gave at the end with the dessert, and Erica's like, try this, it's amazing with this. So FLX Table, I'm naming it because I can give it nothing but a glowing review. You can absolutely spend a lot of money on the meal, but the food itself is outstanding and it is not terribly expensive for what it is, speaking from having spent time in the industry.
Start saving up as soon as you start stalking for an open spot at the table.
Yeah, and if you want a Saturday or Sunday night, man, you're gonna fucking work for it. Or Friday or Saturday night, you're gonna work for it. Weeknights are easy to get, though.
So, speaking of food, Josh did sample our leftovers from the food challenge.
That's right.
And I think we have another convert to the Crispy Black Fungus Fan Club.
Although I do take issue at the fact that they call it Crispy Black Fungus, since it was anything but.
All right, fine. I don't care what they
was
call
it. Was
it
crispy
it's
or
delicious.
Crisp?
No, it's crispy.
It is crispy. Okay,
is it crispy?
Remember.
Maybe it's crisp.
I think it was
maybe
crisp.
It's crisp.
I wonder if they were trying to refer to a
it's
crisp
fresh
flavor or
it's fresh. It's fresh fungus.
I'm going to bank on it was a mistranslation issue.
Sounds good.
It's the Donkey Kong of foods.
But the crying guy, we didn't quite figure out the ideogram picture thing fast enough. So we didn't know what we were getting into with it. We're like, oh, we'll try this. Oh, God, he's not laughing. He's crying because it's so hot. Ah.
Those are spicy tears of regret.
Tears of joy.
Yeah. And the matza was outstanding with
it. The matza was pretty good with that.
It's like matza on its own, nah. Matza with crisp black fungus, pretty damn good because it helps to take away from the intensity. Now, you tried the hog plums.
Which I did. You could not even finish the hog plum.
No, and that was a taste profile that I don't enjoy, since to me that pretty much tasted like bread and butter pickles.
Yeah.
And
that sweet.
Yes. The sweet dill.
But just sweet and just flat. Like, no character
no payoff.
To it.
No, yeah. No point.
And then the texture was, bad. I mean,
I had trouble with the texture.
It's like mega pickle.
I should call him mega pickle.
Well, actually, you know what? I think that's, with a pickle, you tend to, since it's made from a cucumber, you have the hard outside, but the soft inside to break
crisp.
It up.
It's crisp.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just not. It doesn't snap. It squeaks horribly.
No, cucumber, I mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cucumber is crisp and snaps. No, no, the hog plum is
no,
dense.
It's pretty much like all gross. Cucumber skin. It's an entire cucumber skin pickled in brine.
Well done. You made it even less appetizing. That's a skill.
Thank you. I have my skills.
And you had the effervescent Asian nerd steward. You ate eight of his flesh.
He was tasty. That was it, tasty. I would consume his flesh again.
I think you liked it more than anyone else did.
It was all right.
You thought it was all right, but I think he actually enjoyed it.
To me, it tasted like a spicy tuna.
Which I think was what they were going for.
And I have in the past enjoyed spicy tuna.
What about human flesh? Have you in the past enjoyed human flesh?
No, I have not tasted the sweetest of porks in the past.
Well, now that you have roughly gotten the approximation, would you say it's something you wish to pursue? Because here on Craigslist, you can get that kind of thing.
I mean, if it was so artfully prepared as Nerd Stew would flesh, then yes, I might partake.
That guy wanted to be eaten.
As long as, yes, I think
there's that story of the guy who wanted to be eaten.
And I think that's key. It has to be someone who wants to be eaten. So if there is someone who wants to be eaten, perhaps I will help him in his dream.
Well, you've heard it here, folks. Perhaps we can have a match made in, I wouldn't say heaven, but...
Do you want to be eaten alive? Contact Buddies in Space
now. I never stated alive.
Victim of cannibalism.
I don't think that's a case of, you know, I don't want you to kill me and eat me. Is it like more of a case of, I'm going to cut off a piece and I want to watch you eat it?
That's probably, that's yes. My, that's probably my take a on. Really obscure fetish. I know there are fetishes of people who like to eat, and there are fetishes of people who like to be bit, and it's probably an extreme form of that where I actually want to see you consume me. And your cringe says it all. That'd be an extreme end of fetish, and good luck finding a soulmate for that particular.
Are you actually looking this up?
Victim of cannibal agreed to be eaten. Armin Maus, the Craigslist cannibal. Yeah, this is a real thing. I'm just saying, you can get anything on Craigslist.
Including kill.
Including willing human flesh.
You can get a lot of pictures of Don, as our wives have discovered.
Yeah.
I think that's in proliferance everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think that's a difficult commodity.
You're saying there's lots of pictures of penises on the internet? Guys, this is blowing my mind. I have no idea.
The internet cannot contain the pictures of penis, and it is... traveled into mobile phone territory, and I'm sure someone will be more than willing to just snail mail you a picture of their dog.
I'm so retro, I'm sending you an actual Polaroid of my dick.
The slowest Snapchat ever.
When aliens arrive, they're going to come penises out. They're going to be like, we thought this is what you guys did. I'm so embarrassed right now. Glipnock and I totally misread the...
We
infinite
thought,
number of penis things
we
you sent in outer
space.
We thought
this was Earthican greeting.
Dicks out and hands up. What?
I thought this showed, you know, peace and harmonious intent.
Yeah, aren't you supposed to make this Klingon thing and then jerk two guys off with it? We got the wrong channel in space. It's like
first contact happens via chat roulette. So awkward.
All humans apparently like to reenact Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus. Which, by the way, if you haven't seen it, is a very funny video. This one dude, like very skinny, kind of effeminate looking guy, like reenacted Miley Cyrus' video for Wrecking Ball on Snap Roulette. It's just people, you know, you just click. I don't understand what the kids do, but apparently you talk to strangers for a split second. So they would snap in, or whatever you call it, and it would just be this dude like swinging... in like tiny little underwear, swinging the wrecking ball, and it just showed their reaction. It's actually quite funny.
I think chat roulette and Snapchat kind of paint an interesting picture of our society at this point.
Isn't it like speed dating but without the dating?
I think it's speed socializing.
Yeah.
Not forming a connection but wanting that human interaction, but in small bite-sized pieces.
Remotely.
With no danger of ever meeting this person again, so removing the judgment.
That must be very depressing.
Yeah, but it's fascinating to me that when you set up these conditions, it's like, okay, you're going to not have an actual contact with this person. Mm-hmm. It'll be there, they'll see you, you'll see them, and it'll be over after just like however many seconds. What do you want to do? I want to show them my dick. That's just like... That seems to be the answer for so many people. It's like, you know what I've always wanted to do to a random stranger? Show them my dick.
Well, I think it's finding a safe way to rebel against the social conventions without fear of reprisal. You go out in public and show your dick.
You
get arrested.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
You go to Snapchat and show your dick. It disappears in 10 seconds. No one knows who you are. And
the experience, not your...
I don't know. I've never snapped in.
I would hope it didn't disappear after a few seconds.
I mean, talk about your one shot at fame. You know? This is what it is? Oh, that's what it was. Lost forever. It was magnificent while it lasted. But yeah, I think it's just that, I think that social rebellion has always existed. It's come out in various forms, and the latest form is internet anonymity, allowing you to do whatever you want without fear of reprisal, which, honestly, I don't know. I think without the fear of reprisal, the social rebellion kind of loses its impact, and now you just have tongues of dick pics being sallied forth.
I heard tongues of dick pics, which is a whole other thing, but that would be a great band name.
Tongues of dick pics.
That's some deep stuff, man.
I guess that depends on the size of the dick.
Well,
high five. Bam. High five. Nice.
The issue I have with all this is that I don't believe anyone is ever truly anonymous on the internet with anything you do.
Oh, no, for sure you're not. And there's plenty of people who can indeed track you down. And
oh, yeah.
It's a perception of an anonymity.
Yes.
And perception is all important.
It is, but I don't buy it. I mean, I kind of go with the assumption of whatever I put out there, somebody, if anybody really wants to, and I don't think anybody does, but if they really want to, they're going to be able to trace it back to me as a person.
Oh, no, don't sell yourself short. Someone might want to track you down and marvel at your glorious wing.
It's called the Craigslist Cannibal.
Well, now that looks like a tasty treat.
I think this is a little bit of a generational thing. It's safe to say, yes, I'm the oldest guy in the room.
It is a generational thing.
And I am pretty paranoid about what I do and don't put out on the internet.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a generational thing or a maturity thing.
No, it's probably both, but it's definitely a generational thing. That's been studied to death.
Well,
I mean, in the training field, we see these studies all the time.
This atmosphere, if you will, is stunting the growth of that maturity.
Yes.
Where, it I suppose, is kind of a generational thing, but it comes back to a maturity thing where it is a childish response to this available technology, and it's a childish way to use it, and with this perceived anonymity, no one is forcing these people to mature or grow.
But the rules of the game have changed. Applying the definition of maturity from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, to the behavior of now is a dangerous thing.
Well, I get what you're saying, though, because
I agree.
Because they're not getting those immediate consequences that, mm-hmm, you know, showing your dick in some sort of public space.
Right, which used to be the only way.
Yeah, a slap, a punch, handcuffs.
Guys, in the 1800s, you had to hold your dick out for like 8 hours for someone to paint it. I mean, times have changed. No, I absolutely agree. It's just being in the training industry, as it were, like, we're constantly bombarded with all these studies. Like, oh, mm-hmm, if you want to get through the millennials, you have to understand this about them and that thing about them. And there's a lot of cool shit about millennials. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to come to grips with that because you want to dislike them. I don't know. It's just sort of a thing that people do, right? Younger generation. But the concept of mature, like, what is correct? What is mature? What is worth it? Mm-hmm. All of that has changed in a very short period of time. And no one is keeping up with it very well. You know what I mean? I agree. I can't fathom having all my interactions for 2 seconds at a time on Snapchat or whatever. Like, it seems idiotic to me.
And I don't think it's just that. I think it's the whole idea of privacy. It's just becoming less and less valued as you go into younger generations.
But is that simply a response to the fact that it's becoming less and less possible?
Or is it...
We live in a Big Brother state.
Or has the definition of privacy itself changed? Where privacy is obtained through the perceived anonymity of the internet rather than an actual pulling yourself back from society. It's like, well, I'm revealing myself to society, but I am keeping my core anonymous.
Okay, we went really deep here. let me take what you just said and throw something to old man Smike. That's your position in this debate right now.
Yeah, whatever you say.
Get off my lawn. Netflix and chill. So millennials do not go out to bars as much. And beer purveyors are having a real problem with this. Millennials.
Beer purveyors?
Yes, I was reading an article about this. They're struggling because of this. Millennials don't drink as much alcohol. They don't spend their money as frivolously, as hard as that is to believe.
Because they don't have any money. money.
Exactly. They're in a post 9/11, post economic crash world.
Yeah.
But think about that for a second. So this concept of privacy, what if to them, interaction has become the actual physical interaction of any kind has become the pinnacle. And so what if the whole paradigm has shifted? What if our interactions online, I'm aware that they're not that important. I'm a human being and need that social interaction. But for me, I am anonymous by removing myself from the bar scene and spending a night with a friend, someone I'm interested in, and Netflixing. Do you see where I'm going with this?
I do, but I have the sense from stuff that I've read, from things I've experienced and read and learned about online that.
That's that.
And I'm probably completely wrong, but I'm gonna say it anyway because fuck you.
You're old man Spike.
I'm old man Spike. These damn millennials, they are not good at actual in-person. So they're not comfortable with it.
Right.
Not comfortable with communicating in person. They'd rather text somebody. Mm-hmm. They'd rather have some sort of something in between them and another human.
Okay.
All right. I'm kind of buying into Mike's theory. Let's take a look at the last 100 years, though. All right. I know.
I'm not that old. Jesus fucking Christ.
I wasn't trying to date you, but.
But you just did.
There has been a rapid expansion of technology, and it has caused a very rapid globalization in the sense that it is far, far easier to communicate with other human beings now. You know, they've moved from the point where it was through mail and telegraph, where it was, I mean, let's face it, a telegraph, there's very little emotion to it.
Well, the interesting thing about telegraph is every word was expensive.
Every word was
expensive. So you actually really had to put a ton of work in. It was the ultimate texting back when texting plans were limited.
But you're moving more and more and more into a realm where it's far, far easier and almost necessary to communicate on some level with people that you will never know. So, again, we've moved from a point where social interaction was necessary because you had to meet with your immediate group, your immediate community. You had to meet with them. You had to know them because that's who you interacted with. That was the only people you interacted with.
It's the only people you could interact with.
Exactly. You had to know
outside
them.
Of this village is so, darkness and
in that case, privacy was your home. Intimacy was the one person that you invited into your home, but there was still a lot of face-to-face.
Right. And that's just me growing up, and probably you guys growing up. It's like when we were kids, we would wait for our friends to get home so we could hang out. We couldn't text them.
Do you remember when a actual phone tag was like a week long thing?
Yeah.
Answering machines. Absolutely. And how old are you? You're a little older than me, right?
I am 37.
Okay, yeah. So you're at the very tail end of Gen X. Mm. You're firmly Gen X.
Yeah.
And I am technically Gen X by the last year, but you're probably in this too, that weird intermediate generation that remembers before everything was 24 hours over disconnected.
But and I think this is something the millennials and decreasingly as people are younger right now they're just not going to experience loneliness like we did. I mean, it'll be a
technology assisted loneliness.
Loneliness, privacy, interaction, intimacy, the values of these things have all changed for these people because they are indeed forced into a world where they are, by necessity, communicating constantly with a vast array of people.
You'll be ostracized in today's millennial culture if you are not texting, doing some sort of social media. That is a given. This technology, we open Pandora's box with cell phones and the internet. There's no going back. So that's why, I wanted to fault millennials and be like, well, you're missing out on this. But then I kind of realized, no, the paradigm shifted very suddenly and very drastically.
It did. The thing that keeps coming back to my mind is, are they going to realize too late that privacy is actually an important and valuable thing? And I think a lot, I think most of them won't, but I think there will be, you know, a small number who do have something like their identity stolen or have whatever information they're putting out there be used by somebody else in a very strong and negative way against them.
Look at cyberbullying. I mean, it's happening.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but it's become so true. Commonplace that it's more of a...
It's commonplace, but it doesn't happen to everyone. It's common. But it's only common to, you know,
well,
I think a small number of people.
Yeah, but that's true of various other... I mean, this will probably get me in trouble with a certain sect of people.
Get in trouble.
I would say identity theft to many people is probably very close to being raped. Because that is the last vestige of their privacy. That is where they invest the core of their being. And to have that violated, I mean, you know.
I think that generationally, I agree. I don't know if I would apply that to everyone.
No, not everyone. And it, to me, having my identity stolen, it's a horrible, horrible nuisance. But I have built my core identity in a different paradigm than someone who is fully involved in this new
online connected
world.
Because you didn't have that online persona identity from such a young age that you don't identify as strongly with that as like millennials.
Well, identity, what is identity theft to you, Mike?
It's monetary.
It's
financial.
Right. It's your social security number, your credit cards, your check. It's all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Using your name to get credit.
Yes.
What is it to you?
I'm actually pretty much in the same boat. It is primarily, it's going to affect me financially.
Me too. I don't think that's what identity theft is to someone 10 years younger than us.
I think that's far, it having their Facebook.
I think it's literally identity. They're connected identity. I think that's what it is.
Someone has invaded their personal space. They have violated the connections that they've made, however tenuous we may think they might be. They have violated the connections that they have made with other human beings and polluted them and violated them. I mean, if you have your Snapchat hacked and someone is using your name to send out
their dick pics. These aren't my dick pics. This is not cool. This is someone else's dick pics you're getting.
But it's still...
I mean, they're nice, but they're not.
They're not mine. I'm a grower, not a shower, okay? Whoever this nice is, good for them, but it's not my dick. Wow, this took a whole over. No, did you see do you watch Black Mirror, Josh?
I've thought about it. I have a harder time getting into new shows.
It's a vignette series. There's no connection between them.
No, I have a very old man syndrome when it comes to new movies and new shows. I'm very heavily invested into nostalgia and the familiar. And I honestly think I think it's an outpouring of my introverted nature. I tend to what's familiar, what's comfortable.
It's so funny because when I met you compared to now, you are so much more extroverted.
No, I'm not.
You present differently than you did.
You're in a room with two people doing a podcast. That's more on the extrovert side than on the introvert side. It's not.
I mean,
he's surrounded by so much comforting geekdom.
There are millions of people listening to you right now.
But I'm interacting with two people.
They're all in Smike's head, though.
Yes. They are.
I am legion.
I'm interacting with one person and one conglomerate. But, I mean, most people misunderstand what introversion is.
I'll give you that.
I am comfortable with small groups. And to me, a small group, it tends to really be, I'd say about 6 and under.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where I am truly, truly comfortable.
You can have conversations with individuals.
Because that is where I'm starting to be surrounded with people I know. Mm-hmm. And I know, and to me, it's kind of like, I know how they will react to me, so I can let my guard down. I don't have to worry about how I will be judged.
Is that why you gravitate to board games, do you think? Because they tend to not be more than 6 people playing, and that's...
I think that might be a part of it. I think the other part of that is I have a very problem-solving mentality. I like to grab a bunch of pieces, see how they fit together, and then see how I can make them fit together in a different way to perhaps bring about a new paradigm. I work as a service technician. I fix things for a living. I take a problem, I pull it apart, I find the issue, excise it, get things
you're,
back
you're to a master work. Of diagnostic troubleshooting. It's a yeah. very specific and very it's useful skill set. Because once you learn one thing, you can apply it to a lot of other things.
It's funny because you're saying all this and like I think we're a lot more alike than neither of us probably realized before.
I think you both are fucking weird shit. But you know, whatever.
But you throw me in a large group, even with family. I don't like going to my family gatherings because my family is too big.
Your family? I don't like going to family gatherings because I don't know everyone's name yet. And it's been 10 years. Jesus Christ.
I don't know everyone's name yet, and I was born into it. I've been there 37 years.
Your family is cool as shit, but they come on like a tidal wave.
They do.
It's terrible. Like, Erica's first introduction to when we were dating, to his, to their, you know, their collective side of the family, was like Grandma Minnie's 90th birthday. And I was like, there are so many fucking people.
Well, the problem is that we have a ton of extroverts in our family.
You do.
They feed off of social energy.
They do.
Like a bunch of social vampires. And if you stumble into that, they will try to swallow you whole. Which All is right. why I tend okay. to stay on the outside, because, you know, I gain my energy through a more personal connection with a small group of people that I've come to know.
You're a millennial.
No, no. No, that's but a lot of what you're saying, I kind of feel the same way. So. And some people don't believe me when I say, yeah, I'm an introvert. Why are you doing improv?
Yeah, it's a funny dichotomy with you.
It is. It's definitely like I'm either on or off.
Well, with something like an improv, yes, you are interacting with the audience, but you are far more interacting with the small group on stage. That is where your interaction is. The audience becomes secondary, maybe as a means of ideas, if it's, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. But they're on the periphery.
Yeah.
They don't matter.
Well, I can say they don't matter.
Well, I mean, I think socially, they don't matter. That
you're a unique case. For the record, for what it's, I understand what you're saying, and I think maybe improv is not the best example of that.
No, it's not.
you're a weird case and an interesting, I want to cut your brain open and study. And then eat it. I know what you mean.
And, it is dangerous, though, to buy too much into these groupings, though.
People are not that binary.
They are. They are not that easily mm-hmm. quantified. I am an introvert, but I have a lot of weird personality traits. There's a lot of, again, dichotomy
that exhibit,
in
that
me.
Exhibit is extroverted.
Indeed.
I'm an introvert. No, I'm dead fucking serious. I only realized later in life, in the last couple of years, that I was putting myself out there mm-hmm. because I thought that's what I had to do.
And yeah.
And working for home has taught me, I don't have
you're
to be
so
like
good
that.
At it, though.
Well, it's a character. Right,
you know,
it's fun, Mike.
I think it's kind of part of why geeks and nerds were so vilified in our generation, because our generation valued extroverts and minimized introverts. We were seen as the weird ones. Why don't you want to interact?
Why don't you want to do sports?
Why don't you
want
to be a part of society? You're becoming an outcast. It's like, no, I have my own society.
It just won't catch on for another 20 years. So what is the difference between geek and nerd? Let's finish out with this.
All
geek, nerd, what are the differences?
Oh, I tend to think a geek is someone who has found a passion for something that may not necessarily be part of everyone else's reality.
Okay.
A lot of time it does exemplify itself in a love for something fictional. Your Star Wars nerds, your Star Wars geeks, your Star Trek geeks.
Lord of the Rings, Dungeons & Dragons.
They have found
anime.
A world that they love, and it has become a passion to them.
But there are wine geeks. There are...
Right. And again, that's where you can't...
But that might be a bastardization of
that can't be... You can't pigeonhole what a geek is. Like I said, I think it's a passion. I would propose that your sports jocks are, in their own way, a geek.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin Corey loves sports, and that man could come out with stats out of the top of his head for every player that he loved, and to be ridiculous degree.
Swap that out with the player's handbook.
Exactly.
It's the same shit. No, I mean, it's...
Fantasy football is D&D for jocks.
It's all math.
it's math. It's stats.
Yeah.
And
it's tricking, you know, jocks to like math.
I wouldn't even call them jocks if they're into that. I mean, that's a nerdy thing to do.
It's a tradition. It's a very outdated way of labeling. But sports are jocks, right? That was the intrinsic connection. You didn't even have to play them to be a jock if you were into them. But really, you'd probably call that a sports geek now.
No, it's a sports geek. Sure. But again, it was a socially accepted, because sports is at its nature extroverted.
Right. Yeah. All right.
It's a large gathering of people watching another gathering performing. So then it's what's a different a kind of performance. A nerd, I would say, is someone who has found a passion for intelligence. They tend to be someone who likes knowledge. It might be math. It might be science.
So does that cross over with geekdom then? Because it's still passion?
It is. There is definitely a crossover. They tend to seek knowledge for knowledge's sake. Not so much, they aren't learning math to figure out how to use it. They are learning math because it is cool. They aren't, learning the sciences because they want to become a scientist. It's because, oh my God, chemistry is fascinating. Look how these molecules interact.
So I'm just going to say this, judging by the way you're describing it, nerds and geeks are not two different things. The way you're describing it, nerds are a subset of geekdom.
I would say
is that fair?
It is a different. Again, people always try to pigeonhole people to get a better grasp on them. Most people cannot really, really deal with the fact that every person is an individual. They need to have a subset that they can get a hold of so that they can understand this person. And so they start creating these categories.
You're an old man, Smike.
And, you like sports. You're a jock. I get it. That's how I can get a hold of you. You're a sports guy. But if you look at a bunch of jocks, they're all a little bit different. They take that behavior and outport in different ways. You are a nerd. Oh my God, all you like is school. You study. You actually study. Why do you study? You could be out playing football right now. Why are you in your house reading?
Because football gives you concussions.
And you have, a nerd is someone who, their realm is their mind. That is where they live, in their mind.
But they're still passionate. It's a passionate adherence to it or not?
I think I misspoke previously. I don't think it's necessarily a passion. It's just
obsession.
No, I think it's just how they interact with the world.
It's a lens.
It's a lens that they like. I call myself a nerd and a geek. I think I'm a very casual geek. I never really quite got that passion towards one thing. I like a lot of things, and I dabble in them. But I like the things, that are typified as geeky: board games, video games, anime, weird movies, science fiction, fantasy. But I like it all. But when you like it all, you can't really get that all-consuming passion towards one thing so much. Mm-hmm. I call myself a nerd because I'm, as a fairly extreme introvert, I look at the lens through perception of a very logical, I don't want to say intelligence because I'm not trying to make myself seem smart,
but intellectual,
yes. Mm. I don't like to respond to things emotionally. It makes me uncomfortable.
Okay.
I realize I have emotions. I'm not afraid to show them, but I don't like that to be my first response because that betrays how I see the world.
You're Vulcan.
I'm half Vulcan.
So you're Spock.
I'm Spock. Okay. I have the emotions. I don't like them.
All right.
They're there. And I, as a logical being, I have to acknowledge that they're there. And at times I have to let them out. And I try not to be ashamed of that, but I don't really like them. They pollute that purely logical realm that I am far more comfortable in.
Oh my God, you're such a nerd, Spock.
I am, absolutely. Spock, and that's nerd. I think that's actually an outpouring why I like the board games. They have rules. Mm-hmm. And I detest cheaters because they break the rules.
They've let their emotions take them.
Exactly. They are ruled by emotion. They have to win because they have to win. And kind of accept the cold
logic
them.
That they are
so
going to lose.
Break the rules.
Strategy and skill, that is the means of winning.
I don't like losing to luck. I'm not allowed to play phase 10 because the luck of the draw kills me. I get furious at it. If I lose at something like Risk, fine. Your strategy beat mine. Mm-hmm.
I get to try another one next time.
Yeah. You know, the dice are still there, but there has to be a strategy. And I can say, yeah, the dice kind of screwed me on a few rolls. But overall, you had a better strategy than I did.
Right.
And I love rules lawyering. Not in the sense that I want to punish you for breaking the rules, but I love to see when people take the rules and twist them just enough to kind of not quite find the loopholes, but find the way that this rule interacts with this rule to create a situation that you would think shouldn't be possible, but it's still absolutely legal.
Gaming the system.
It sounds like you need a good system lawyer.
I probably would have done well at lawyering or debating or something like that, except with debating, you're going to run into a lot of people that I hate where they argue from emotion because you can't win that argument.
What do you mean? Why are you saying that?
Exactly.
We got to wrap things up.
I just want to throw out, Mike got a new TV and then it's got a curved screen. That's why he's a fucking hypocrite.
Yeah, so I dropped the big, I've made an impulse purchase. I bought an OLED. I'm breaking it in right now. It takes a lot of work. It's gorgeously fucking ridiculous. Only 1080p, but that's all I wanted. But yes, it is curved. I've talked a lot of shit about curved. It was my only option when I bought it, so I suck as a human being because I'm a hypocrite. Have you?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I was actually banking on VR.
Yeah, I was too. That was what I was thinking.
I'm not. I'm waiting on VR. I'm not that into it.
I guess I missed the hypocrisy part.
Yeah, the hypocrisy was a big clue, but I mean, it's did not. A lot of things I'd be hypocritical about. Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit StolenDress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. Josh J. Michael Lippincott? Is that what you went with?
J. Michael, yeah.
Yeah. It has been an honor to have you on. Thank you for classing us up substantially. And I got to go leave and get pizza more often.
Some deep shit, man.
I know. And I come back and it's like, oh, shit, we're in fucking NPR territory now. What happened here?
I like to examine the truth behind the truth. That's what makes me good at diagnosing problems.
You should be a doctor. A space doctor.
Oh, God, no. I can't deal with people's innards. That's
especially
horrible.
Floating around in zero gravity?
That'd be even worse.
That'd be gross. You are.
S. Michael Smith. You are.
M. Michael Crossy. You are.
J. Michael Lippincott.
And we're buddies in space. Thank you for listening.
Kids.
So you go send some dick pics now?
No, I'm not the right generation.
You gonna go get some dick pics?
No, I'm not interested in dicks.
I'll send you a dick pic if you want it. Just say the word.